Welcome, everybody, to the Stoke It Up podcast, a podcast encouraging you in your journey with God. I'm Alan Stoddard, and I am here with Kenneth Priest, and we are here to do some podcasts on sermon-based small groups. Nobody else is doing it, and we're going to do it. We wrote the book because of your boy, Kenneth, and we're excited about it. We're going to have about 8 episodes on sermon-based small groups and discipleship and the Great Commission. So welcome. Let's jump into this amazing conversation about making disciples. Let me set it up with a story. I was in a big meeting with about 40 pastors, probably about 8 years ago, and we were invited to be a part of a discussion. It was a good meeting, but the discussion was to focus on disciple making. Here was the problem. It was really fascinating because 40 pastors, we could not get forward on disciple making because everyone had a different definition of what disciple making was and what success looked like. It was really amazing. There were times of tension and frustration. Some people were Sunday school only. Some people were small groups. Some people were one-on-one disciple making. We needed to change our model. And so we need to look at what does it look like to make disciples in a local church. So guys, Kenneth Priest is with us, and I wanted to just unleash him to talk about our need for revitalization and renewal in disciple making and what he's thinking, and then we'll turn it towards small groups in the days ahead.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Alan. Always good to join you on this podcast and have a conversation, especially when it's something that you and I both are passionate about. Sermon-based small group, disciple making, and the pathway forward. And I think, you know, you're latching on exactly to the key problem. 40 pastors in the room, and you know, you have 40 plus authors on discipleship out there, and none of them can decide either what really disciple making is. You pick up one book and it tells you one thing, and another book tells you something else altogether. The reality is, as you and I have discussed, disciple making is really at the heart of what needs to take place in church revitalization. So whether you're dealing with a replant, a renewal, a restart, it really doesn't matter which form of revitalization you're engaged in. Disciple making is key to doing this. You know, Olson, in his book, The American Church in Crisis, and this was probably back in 2008, I think, 2007, when that book released, he discussed that the American church is in crisis. At first glance, this may not be apparent, but while many signs of its evident success and growth abound, in reality, the American church is losing ground and the population continues to surge. That's the reality of what we're seeing, even amidst rural churches, right? So there are certain communities out there that the population of that community is in decline, but it's really rare. I mean, we look at a lot of these communities and you know, we just continue to grow. Even amidst rural America, we are growing in populace in many of our states. And where you are right now in Texas, of course, is one key state that you see that. And even though the population is growing, the church is not growing at the same rate of the population, if it's growing at all. And oftentimes the church isn't growing at all. It's the reaching side of this. And that's where you and I both are of like-minded. You know, disciple making stems out of the Great Commission. And so evangelism and discipleship have to go hand in hand. They're not supposed to be separated as two different things. They're united in purpose and in mission. And when we understand this, you know, I tell the story a couple of years ago for those from the Southern Baptist background like I am, even at our Southern Baptist convention at the national meeting, we put together a task force to look at evangelism and a task force to look at discipleship. But nowhere did we try to say these two task forces should actually be one task force and a subgroup address evangelism and a subgroup of address discipleship, and then come back together with a unified strategy and report. And so what ends up happening is the president puts these two teams together. They go out, they do their work. The next year they come back and we have two separate reports. Whereas the Great Commission is unified, the church continues to separate. And I believe that's the number one issue that we have in disciple making is this separation. And I believe that that is what's driven the decline of the local church is a lack of genuine disciple making. And of course, the local church can be expressed even as you were sharing there, you know, whether it is a house church or an established traditional church, a new church plant, or we're going through a revitalization. You know, the expression of the local church, the model of the local church, absolutely does not matter. I hear all this criticism about mega churches and the problem that they are. Look, the size of the church is irrelevant if disciple making is occurring. And so people got to get over themselves and get over the size of churches and focus on the main thing. And of course, everybody always goes, oh, the main thing is evangelism. No, the main thing is the Great Commission, evangelism, discipleship. And so that's kind of the conversation you and I've been having as of late. And you even put out on social media this idea of the modern day discipleship, right? Is the attending, the connecting, the serving, and then the going out. And you talk about flipping that funnel, that we really need to look at how Jesus did things and investing. And this has been that ongoing disciple making conversation, right? Do you disciple one on one? Everybody goes, oh yes, one on one. Well, Jesus discipled one on three, right? And so you have this one on three. It's a very small group, but even outside of that, he still had another small group, the one on 12 that he discipled. And so the three, the 12, then he has the 70. You know, and then you go out to the multitudes. And so the reality is we've got to flip that funnel and figure out the most effective disciple making strategy within the context of the environment that you're in. And it begins with thinking smaller instead of thinking bigger. We've got to be okay with smaller groupings. You know, oftentimes people define success by the number of people attending, and they want to look at the big crowd and say, oh, that was a successful event. But when it comes to disciple making, the number being smaller, I tell pastors, and this is how we do revitalization. You start small, you go slow, you be intentional. If you want to see a culture shift within your church, start small, go slow, be intentional. This is how we have to do things if we're going to change the culture. And we've got to get this Great Commission culture back in the New Testament church.
So let me reel us in a little bit on that funnel and just camp here just for a minute. And if you want to log on, if you're listening to Twitter, if you're on Twitter or my Facebook page, I found this image and it was I've gotten more comments on that funnel picture than anything. I mean, people are going, wow, you're right. And here's the secret sauce. Pastors will admit we're not making disciples. I think if you pin us down, we'll admit we've gotten it wrong for a lot of times. Now, whether it's one-on-one, which I have a recent passion for new believers, we're not discipling new believers. But then you ask, if let's go Harry Pyland on this thing. What if Harry Pyland asked? He would say, okay, are you doing any leadership training with your small group leaders? Are you discipling them? If none of that's going on, I know it hurts, but I have to admit, I'm not at where I need to be, if I could say it like that. There's no way I can be making disciples the way that the funnel would tell us, which is basically an affirmation of Robert Coleman's book, The Master Plan of Evangelism, that says, absolutely, start with three, go to the 12, think smaller, all that Kenneth just said. So if you're listening and you're a pastor and leader, you have to admit, you have to evaluate where you are, and then you have to admit, I'm not where I want to be. I'm convinced that if a pastor or leader doesn't do that, then we might as well not try to make them convince them, because it's not going to work. And here's what I hear, Kenneth, I hear this. People say, oh, there are many ways to do it. And I get that. I want to go, guys, we're not, I get that. You're so right. But the problem is, it's kind of like the Billy Sunday thing. I want to go, you know, I don't, you know, there's many ways to make disciples. So I'm going to, you know, which way are you doing it? Oh, they're not doing it. Well, I think I'll keep doing what I'm doing instead of what you're not doing.
Absolutely. And that's the key right there, brother.
So we need renewal and revival and disciple making in the church. And if you want to check that funnel out, and you get, if you're on Twitter, you can go to Alan's underscore A-L-A-N underscore. Stoddard, and I'll put a link to my Twitter page in the feed, but you can take that picture and use it to disciple your leaders. It's convicting, but it's a good picture. So Kenneth, let me stretch it a little bit and ask you, do you believe most churches are Great Commission churches in the way that the New Testament paints that picture?
You know, I know everybody wants the answer to be yes, but in reality, we're not. Not how the Great Commission, not how the New Testament paints the Great Commission, right? Because, again, our churches historically, and this is not just Southern Baptist, I mean, you look at Protestant churches across the board, and historically, what our churches do is we go through cycles of focusing on discipleship and then a cycle of focusing on evangelism. And sometimes we go through a cycle of neglecting both, right? And so we use other things to be a distraction for us. So, you know, we're involved in, we want to call it missional, and therefore it's evangelism adjacent, where we're out there doing servant evangelism, supposedly, and things like that. But the problem is we're doing all this servant issues, but there's never any evangelism connected to it, right? It's the idea of, you know, let's go take care of the hungry, but let's not tell them about Jesus. We don't want to offend them. Let's just give them a glass of water and a little loaf of bread. And so we're not accomplishing what the New Testament establishes as the Great Commission model. And so, you know, there are churches that are doing it, right? That we know that there's some out there that are doing it, but it's the, you know, the question is most churches. And so the answer is no, most churches are not engaged as a Great Commission church the way the New Testament sets us up to be.
So what is the pathway back? We need to be Great Commission people. And, you know, we say that, I've said that, so I feel like I'm feel like I'm being disobedient when I say what I'm about to say. I don't mean it as harsh as it comes out, but I feel like I've gotten a lot of this wrong. Now, that doesn't mean I've no discipling happened. It doesn't mean growth didn't happen. Great things have happened. However, when I look at it, I go, ooh, I wasn't paying attention in some areas. And I got lost trying to grow the church numerically. Yeah. And we did not grow spiritually. And so it's become a passion. And so I've been telling people this. Your life is a Great Commission life, but I think we're missing that on the altar of church growth. I sound like I'm anti-church growth. I'm not, but.
And you're not, but here's the reality, right? So God intends for his church to grow. Matthew 28, Acts 1:8, Acts 2:46-47. God intends for the church to grow. The issue is this issue of growing in a disciple making way, right? And so I believe that there's three things that the church needs to do. Number one, we need to return to the Lord. Look at Revelation chapter 2, right? Look at the church at Ephesus. Look at the churches are told to return to the Lord, right? And so you have to get into your hermeneutical accuracy here and your exegesis to say, what does it mean to return to the Lord? Well, it means you left the Lord. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? I just want to break this down and really get through all the difficulty for you. You left the Lord. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. Return to the Lord. Of course, with the church at Ephesus, they look, and this is where we see a lot of churches today, man. They stand against false teaching. They're biblically solid. These things are great, but you lost your first love of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so return to the Lord. The second thing that we need to do, I take out of Nehemiah chapter 8. You look at those first few verses there. We actually need to listen to the Lord, right? Now, you can't listen to God if you haven't returned to God. Right. So you got to return to him so that you can hear from him. So return to the Lord and then listen to the Lord. And that's where we're seeking. What does God want us to uniquely do at this particular time in history and our particular church context? And that usually, you know, you get into the strategy conversation with strategists and, you know, they talk about mission and vision and vision path and all of this, you know, all of that stems out of listening to God. I don't spend a lot of time on developing those things because I spend more time thinking and helping pastors think through how do we hear from God in our present context. We hear from God by spending time in prayer and time in his word, right? And so we return to God. We listen to God. And then the final thing is, goes back to where I started, that God intends for his church to grow. And so we have to obey the Lord. So return to the Lord, listen to the Lord, obey the Lord. We take that straight out of the Great Commission. We are to be obedient followers of Jesus, to go make disciples, to baptize, to teach. And so it is the tying together, once again, of evangelism and disciple making. That's where we have to be. So with that three, and it's not simple. I don't want to act like it's a simple path, but it is really a relatively easy path to understand, or maybe it's simple to understand, but not easy to accomplish. I get that. But we do have to get back to that point of spending time with God as a people of God, spending time in God's word, and then obediently going forward from God's word.
All right. Amen. So we return now, pastor, leaders, and listeners, we return to the Lord. I'm going to reiterate real quick. We return to the Lord. That means I have to admit I'm not where I want to be. I've left where God's heart is regarding the Great Commission. That's what I heard when Kenneth was talking. Listening to the Lord gets him involved in what would in the obedience. What does God want me to do, our churches to do? And then obeying the Lord is actually getting involved and doing the strategy, not the program, but the strategy that it will take to pull off what he says. Now, we're going to argue in these podcasts that you need to move and use, move to or use in some way, sermon-based small groups. So, Kenneth, give us a quick rundown on what you see, just going for it. You and I talk this stuff all the time. I so enjoyed our conversation about Sunday school the other day and all that, because it's an interesting thing that's going on. If we value disciple making in smaller groups, we have to address this topic. There's no getting around it. So what do you think the state of group life is today in the church, and why the push for sermon-based small groups?
Well, I think holistically, the state of group life is in a crisis, right? It was in a crisis pre-pandemic, and it's probably an exacerbated crisis post-pandemic. People have acquiesced the gathering, so of worship, but also of group life, and so they've turned it over to technology, and let's just gather in small group via Zoom. And so we're missing out for some people. Now, I'm not talking about the committed core. They're showing up, but you had all of these people that we lost, which showed us that they weren't connecting. And that should show us that group life has a problem, because the whole point of groups is supposed to be connections. And so it doesn't matter if you're Sunday school, if you are home group, if you are a community group, if you are adult Bible study, if you are life group, I don't care what you call it. The point of groups is connecting, and connecting through the word of God, right? And genuine koinonia is what's supposed to be experienced. Which, if you study that word koinonia, a lot of people get hung up on the fellowship side of koinonia. You need to do a little more study on this word, because koinonia is not just about fellowship. Koinonia is about the ministry and mission being accomplished by this group together. And so koinonia is bringing us together in fellowship, but it's bringing us together in fellowship for the purpose of accomplishing mission and ministry. And so if you stop at fellowship, your group is not connecting. You've got to move. And this goes back to that funnel, right? You got to move people to the serving element of it. We've got to be splashing the world. You know, that funnel's upside down. You saw water pouring all over the world. We've got to be splashing the world with this. And so that's where we've got to move to. So our group life is not where it needs to be. And it's because we are not connecting. I believe that sermon-based small groups creates that opportunity, because number one, the group life is an origination point for disciple making, right? And so in churches, we make it the destination of discipleship. I want to get people into small groups. And so and we talk about this, and you and I have discussed this before, and this is a part of my dissertation. It's a part of our group's book that we did. We talk about, you have your crowd, you have the community, you have the core, and that's the reverse side of the funnel, where you're drawing people down. And there's a reality that the church functions this way, but those of us in the leadership positions have got to take that and flip it around, so that we're intentionally grabbing those smaller groups to funnel outward as well. And so honestly, this funnel is running in two different ways. We kind of have this side over here that's growing, getting us the people that we need to pull out and put in this funnel over here. So that's the growing and expanding. And that's where group life, it stays in this one funnel. It never flips around into the other funnel. And so it became this destination point for disciple making. And group life was never intended to be the destination of disciple making. It was intended to be the place where people connect and experience biblical koinonia so that we can go out and serve the community with the Great Commission, so that we're going out by twos, in the 70, in the 500. You know, I mean, this is the model that Jesus intended to take place.
And we're going to argue that from the passages that we give in the book, and to argue that sermon-based small groups, the teaching on a Sunday morning, needs to be resurfaced somewhere in the week in a small group. And there are benefits galore to this. We're not going to go through them all. Well, that is another episode. But pastor, leader, if you're listening, this can be something that we're going to prove to you. We're going to prove it, that it's a better model, especially if you're a smaller church or a mid-sized church. I had a guy, I overheard him at a conference lately in June. He said this, he said, "We tried small groups, but I forgot that our people wouldn't want people to come to their house because they live in the hood." And I get it. This brother lives in a mega city. And Gina leaned over to me and she said this, Gina's my wife. And she said this, "Then where are they doing it?" And the guy made it sound like it didn't work. And so we just don't do it. And so, you know, I'm Calvary Chapel. So Calvary Chapels are known for platform teaching and discipleship that happens from the platform. We're not against that. However, we're saying that's limited. And we're saying, how are your people experiencing real koinonia if they're not meeting in small groups?
Absolutely.
So where will we go? Let me give you, as our listeners, and I'll put this in the show notes, where are we going to go with these podcasts in the days ahead? There's a book that we wrote. Kenneth actually headed it up, and we combined our dissertations. And I did a dissertation on sermon-based small groups, and then Kenneth took it and put it on steroids and used it for revitalization purposes in local churches, because we think sermon-based small groups are just got some big-time benefits. So where we're going to go is we're going to look, like today, we've looked at the biblical case for the use of sermon-based small groups, and we're focusing on the Great Commission today. The next one, we're going to talk about the role of the pastor, because it sounds like, well, why are you going to do that? I thought you were going to talk about groups. If the pastor doesn't have it together, then it's not going to work. And you're going to be surprised, pastors. Here's a small preview. We're going to argue that the pastor should be his own minister of education. And we've got a plan to actually show you that, how to do that. And then we're going to look at the priority of small groups in connection with the pastor's preaching. And then we're going to look at some research we did about 10, no, it's 2008 that the research came out. So we're going to update that research and show you how churches are now using sermon-based small groups. If you're a church plant, they're using sermon-based small groups, almost all of them, especially off campus. And so we will go there, how to use the web, how to develop a writing team, the options for that, the negatives for it. There's some negatives that make it very difficult. So we're going to look at all of that. That's where these podcasts will go. So let's end today with a look at what should a church do, Kenneth? I mean, what should a pastor do in evaluating group life in the church?
Yeah, so that's really where it all begins, right? We go back to Genesis, and every day God looked at what he had done. He evaluated what he had done and said it was good. And so we can take that model of evaluation and take that into the church and say, God expects us to evaluate the church and determine if what we're doing is good or not. And so we really need to evaluate our group life. We need to look and see if we're doing disciple making, and have we created our groups to be a destination with no other option? Or are we really creating them to be this originating point, this sending out missionally to accomplish things? And the way that we know that is based on the evaluation markers might be something like, do we notice that the people that go on mission trips are all stemming from the same small group, right? And so every year when we do this mission trip, it's really the same group that's coming out, and they all seem to be coming from the same class. So what are the markers that's happening in that class that's getting them to go out? Or the same ones that are engaged in, you know, whatever ministry of service for our community, are these coming out of the same groups? Or there doesn't seem to be any system, any strategy to this at all. We just kind of people from wherever. So it's more of their heart speaking to them. They're going, the church is not intentionally engaging and discipling people to engage in this methodology. And so our evaluation of group life is to begin looking at those things and asking those questions. Are people connecting? Are they moving into genuine koinonia, which is a missional endeavor, not just a fellowship endeavor? But we also have to ask that question of, is fellowship happening, right? And so you and I know this. We've discussed this many times. Sunday school, on-campus groups, it's very difficult to have genuine fellowship. And so what's taking place in that Bible study hour? And do we see this group as a whole moving off campus at some point? Whether it's lunch on Sunday afternoon, they go together. They're scheduling a dinner at somebody's house on Friday night or on Tuesday night or whatever. Do we see these groups moving off campus to ensure that they get that fellowship side? The same thing is true for our off-campus groups, though. Are we seeing biblical knowledge grown in them, or is it all fellowship? They never move to biblical application conversation, so they have a dinner club. It's the people that they invite, and they say, oh, it's a time for us to follow up on the pastor's sermon, but they just sit around and fellowship the whole time, and they never engage with the text. And so you're going to see that as you evaluate where people are on kind of this disciple-making spectrum, that you've got these holes, right? You got these gaps. People that fellowship all the time, and they don't continue the discussion of the text, they're not growing spiritually. People that spend all of their time studying in the text and they don't ever engage in the koinonia of fellowship, they're like the Dead Sea, man. They get all this intake, but they don't have anything going out. And so it just kind of backlogs on them, and it's suffocating and stifles growth in their life. And so what ends up happening is these groups aren't growing, and therefore the church is not growing. And so when we look at a church that's not growing, we look at those factors, but then again, we look at a church that is growing and we may see some of the same factors, and it's because it's created this social club status of what's happening in the life of the church because our groups are not moving missionally.
Yeah, I like that. Let me ask you you pretty much hit an on-campus answer right there. Let me push you to an off-campus question. Where do you see off-campus groups? Like I would fall into, and correct me if, you know, Kenneth and I don't always agree on everything, but we always meet in the middle somewhere. I don't think we live in the day now where you cannot be doing off-campus groups of some kind. I'm not saying get rid of your established Sunday school if you have it. I think that'd be a big mistake. But I'm saying I don't think to not do off-campus groups now is, to me, insane. Am I right? What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this for years, right? And actually, we've joked about writing a book called Hybrids. A church needs to be doing hybrids. You've got to have both on-campus and off-campus. You've got to create opportunities. I like to use the word on-ramps, right? So you got to have on-ramps for people to engage in small groups at the comfort level that they're in. But you have to have the intentional strategy, and we'll deal with this some a little bit when we discuss that issue about how to be your own ME. You've got to have the intentional strategy of how to move people from where they are to biblically where they need to be. The on-ramp is bringing people in where they are. You have to figure out, I'm trying to think, you know, across the U.S., Interstate 20 kind of makes that east-west drive for a long ways, or I-10. And as you're driving down the interstate, there's all kinds of off-ramps and all kinds of on-ramps. You got to figure out which ones are bringing people into the church, which people are bringing onto the small group. And then you got to pay attention to the off-ramps. Where are people exiting? the church? Where are they disengaging, and why are they disengaging? And so hybrids are the way to meet people where they are, wherever they are. And so people that are more comfortable with a traditional model of on campus, you've got it. People that are more comfortable, or they don't know what's happening in that small group, so they're going to visit with somebody that's in a more relaxed, casual setting at their home, at the coffee shop. Look, let's face it, community groups can happen. I mean, you used to lead a young adult group at Starbucks, right? On Sunday morning, the young adults will meet at Starbucks, and then y'all go down to the church house less than a mile down the road. And it grew, right? Starbucks loved it because they were making money off your people coming in, buying their coffee, and you were able to engage these young adults at the coffee shop. And so you can do these groups anywhere. It doesn't matter where. I mean, I've got one small town that, you know, the pizza place was closed on Sunday, the local pizza place, and the owner was a member of the church, and he let them use their church, let the church use his pizza shop to have their community group on Sunday nights.
No kidding.
So we've got to meet people where they are. We've got to create hybrids. We can't do away with off-campus groups, and we can't do away with on-campus groups. You've got to have both. You've got to get creative. And quite honestly, Alan, you brought up Harry Pyland earlier. This is, you know, Harry Pyland. When you go back and you look and study Flake's formula, which I wrote a book on revitalizing the church using Flake's formula, this was key. You put people wherever you need to put people in order to meet the needs of what you've got, right? And so as a pastor, I need to be intentional of saying, where can I place people? And that's where hybrids are key.
Amen. Well, we're going to shut it down, land a plane here, because we can keep going. We're going to just piecemeal this out. Thanks for the conversation, Kenneth. Guys, we're going to put some things in the show notes for you to copy and paste into a note on your phone. If you want to get a strategy, we basically wanted to bring up a couple things today. One is that there is a big need for us to do healthy church and Great Commission church. And we're arguing that sermon-based small groups are a huge factor and a tool that you could use to align your church for disciple-making. There's more to come on that. Now, if you're listening and you would like to get our book, it's called Groups That Revitalize. If you will hit me up in a direct message on Twitter, I will send the first three people that hit me up on Twitter, I will send you our book free of charge, no problem. And then I'll put a link to a couple other books that Kenneth has written if you'd like to get those. We're not necessarily trying to sell books. We're just saying we got resources if you feel like getting them. But we want to resource you. So we look forward to the further conversation about sermon-based small groups. Kenneth, thanks for being with us today on the Stoke It Up podcast. And we will see you at the next time, man. We're on a roll.